From the land of Grand Theft University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll take a look at the commodity markets and futures trade with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Dave Dickey will be here with the Ag News. We'll check in on the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. And a special guest for the afternoon, ag economist Daryl Good from the University of Illinois, will join us to talk about yesterday's prospective plantings and grain stocks numbers. And it all happens during this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Let's check the numbers on this Tuesday afternoon in Chicago as they finished up at the CME Group. The nearby soft red winter wheat in the May at $6.85 and a quarter, 12 cents lower. July at $6.90, down 11 and a half. The hard red July finished at the $7.56 in the harvest month, down 9 and a quarter. May corn futures at $5.75, finished 5 and a half higher. July at $5.12 and a half, up 5 and 3 quarters. And September at $5.08 and a half, up 6 and a half cents. December $5.05, up 7 and a quarter, and the March corn of next year $5.12 and a quarter, up 7 and a quarter. May of 2015 at $5.17, up 7 cents. May soybeans $14.84 and a half, 20 and a half cents higher. July at $14.57 and a quarter, up 27 and 3 quarters, and August beans $13.80 and a quarter, up 19 and a quarter. September at $12.65 and a half, 17 and a half higher. November's at $12.07 and a quarter, up 20 cents for the day. In January, $12.12, up 19 and a half. Bean meal futures at 482.70, up 340. Bean oil at 41.40, 98 cents higher. Live cattle futures from the CME Group in the April at 144.75, were down $1.10. June at 136.47 and a half, down $1.02 and a half cents. April feeders at 176.45, 57 and a half lower. May at 176.77 and a half, down $1.07 and a half. And the August contract there at 178.37 and a half, down $1.02 and a half cents. Lean hog futures at $127.80, and the April up $1.80. The May at $125.50, up $1.50, and the June at $127.60 per 100 pounds, 42 and a half cents higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That address again, willag.org. Here's what the weather forecast, rather, here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, May contract, $99.57 a barrel. That's down $2 and a penny. The RBOB gasoline or wholesale price is a nickel and a tenth lower than it was yesterday at $2.86.6 a gallon. And ethanol futures at $3.50, up 4 1/10 cents. Natural gas at $4.28 1/10. That's 9 cents lower for the day. And the diesel fuel trading at $2.82 4 cents. Down 4 7/10. Gold futures at $1,279.90 an ounce, $3.80 lower. The dollar at 80.09 is down 0.01 for the afternoon. Now, here's the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. Mostly sunny skies and a high of 56 degrees, a west wind at 15 to 18. Tonight, a chance of showers. And then showers, likely. There'll be possibly a thunderstorm. That'll come after 1 a.m. Cloudy, a low of 41 this evening. West winds at 5 to 7. Chance of precipitation this evening in the area set at 60%. Tomorrow, occasional showers, possibly a thunderstorm, a high near 55 degrees tomorrow. We'll have a east wind at 9 to 13 miles an hour, gusting to 17, and rainfall set at the 80% level. Wednesday night, occasional showers, a few thunderstorms, a low of 49 degrees, again an 80% chance of rainfall. And Thursday, a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and 66 degrees. Showers and thunderstorms on Thursday night, showers on Friday, and Friday night, mostly cloudy and 33 degrees and breezy. Mostly sunny by the time we get to Saturday, a high of 51. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City right here on the Closing Market Report.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
On this Tuesday afternoon, the very first day of April 2014, the phone line has Wayne Nelson waiting patiently on it to talk to us about the futures markets. Good afternoon to you, Wayne.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Yesterday, USDA released a couple of important reports. They usually set a tone. We'll hear about that a bit later from Daryl Good in the marketplace. Today, that tone was higher.
Yeah, you know, we looked at mainly the reports being somewhat neutral yesterday, and they acted that way for a few minutes, and then the funds come back in buying with a vengeance, and that continued on today, and we pushed up through some, technical points this morning, and we had very strong closes in both the corn and the beans today.
What do you suppose the funds might see that was not revealed in yesterday's reports?
That's probably the biggest question we have out there, because generally, you know, we're talking about the tight stocks and the beans, and we generally that's led by a supply market is led by the cash market, and we've seen the basis on the interior and that basically slipping back, the basis in South America slipping back. A lot of corn moved on this yesterday, and some beans moved on this yesterday on the big move up, and probably some more today. So that's not being cash led. They seem to want to be talking about the weather and the delays that we might face this spring because of the cold soil temperatures and the way that the some of the forecasts are staying, below normal average for this time period until about the third week in April. So those are some of the things they're talking about. And then we heard a rumor that there might be an announcement coming up good on biodiesel that might help the bean oil market.
No, there may be the background noise that's pushing things higher, I would guess, huh?
Well, you know, we can't say for sure, but that's definitely something we hadn't been talking about until today.
Well, something's in the marketplace other than what USDA had to release yesterday, I would think.
Well, that is a given. It's just figuring out what it is.
Well, we'll have to continue to talk and see what we think it might be. The question then, I suppose, and I believe you were asked this morning by Dave Dickey, too, is there anything that a producer should do, especially with new crop beans?
With the new crop beans. You know, we were just looking at some of the different things, and there's a lot of feelings that they have the possibility of kicking on up another 25 to 30 cents. We're looking at the ideas that if we sit back and look for a little bit of room up here, that we're going to want to be putting some put strategy in here, because above $12 beans is a money-making situation for all the farmers. And it's also a dollar over what we thought they'd be just a month ago. So we'd like to do a little further pricing as we move on up, probably in that 12-25 range.
What do you hear from South America on the bean harvest there? How's it gone? They've not had a great yield there, but they're not doing too terribly bad.
No, I mean, basically along the way, I think the weather is cooperating a little bit more for them to be finishing up. They are selling their beans a little more. There's a lot of lineups at the ports to load out. They are assuming to do a better job loading them out. And, you know, there was some of the last indications that, you know, had pushed the yield up not quite as low as what some were trying to talk below. And I know that Argentina, even more so than Brazil, was increasing, bringing back up what they'd reduced a couple weeks before and what they were looking at because of their good early harvest.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time with us today, Wayne.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He is in New Market, Indiana. Joins us here on this Tuesday afternoon.
Support for agricultural information on WILL comes from Busey. With over 145 years of agribusiness experience, Busey's team is committed to providing resources to today's producers. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Now here's Dave Dickey with today's Ag News.
In agricultural news, executives from manufacturing giant Caterpillar Incorporated are on Capitol Hill today to explain what one senator calls an aggressive strategy to avoid paying billions of dollars in U.S. taxes. Michigan Senator Carl Levin says that Caterpillar has avoided paying $2.4 billion in U.S. taxes since 2000 by shifting profits to a wholly controlled affiliate in Switzerland. Levin chairs the Senate Investigations Subcommittee. They put out a report saying that Caterpillar paid PricewaterhouseCoopers $55 million to develop the tax strategy. The committee's Democratic staff compiled the report as part of a 9-month investigation into Caterpillar's taxes. It was released yesterday. The report raises questions about the validity of the tax strategy, but does not accuse the Peoria, Illinois-based manufacturer of breaking the law. A review of security filings shows that last year's spike in the price of ethanol blending credits cost independent refiners at least $1.35 billion, more than three times as much as the year before. The tally is a conservative estimate, as it includes only 9 refiners that disclosed the figures. Others affected did not specify the cost of buying renewable identification number paper credits used to meet quotas for blending biofuel into gasoline and diesel. The data may give oil refiners more firepower as they urge regulators to stick to a proposal to cut back ethanol requirements for this year. A final rule is due to be completed in the coming months, and some analysts are saying the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency could alter the proposal after the outcry from the biofuel lobby. Valero Energy Corporation, the biggest U.S. refiner, with 10% of capacity, spent about $517 million on RINs in 2013. Valero estimates that it will spend another $250 to $350 million on RINs in 2014. China's HSBC Manufacturing Index fell to 48.0 in March from 48.5, slightly worse than the 48.1 in a preliminary report, and its third consecutive monthly drop. Numbers above 50 indicate expansion in China's economy. Total new orders fell faster than expected. The HSBC index implies that the first quarter economic growth likely fell below the 7.5% rate that China's leaders have targeted for the full year. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Earlier this morning, ag economist Daryl Good joined me in my Mumford Hall studio to talk about yesterday's USDA prospective plantings and grain stocks figures. He has long said those set the tone for the marketplace in April, May, and June. Yesterday's reports apparently were no different.
I think they really do, because you get a combination with these set of reports of old crop information as well as new crop. So it does have some added importance, I think, because it's a measure of how rapidly we're using the old crop, how much we have left to get through the remainder of the year. And then it's our first hard look at trying to gauge how big the upcoming crop might be. So there's a lot of information in these reports. And we don't get updated for another quarter, so they carry some weight for an extended period of time.
You've had some time to take a look at them, more than just the early reaction. Take me through corn, the numbers, and what it might mean for the next 3 months.
Corn, starting with the March 1 stocks number at just right at 7 billion bushels. Putting that in context, that's about 100 million bushels less than the market expected to see. But expectations were in a huge range, I think 700 million bushel range there. So, but when we do the calculations of what that stock number implies for feed and residual use of corn during the first half of the year, you get a very large number, over 3.8 billion bushels, 3.85 billion, which is much larger than we've been in 5 or 6 years. And so the question is, does that rate of use, implied use at least, justify the USDA's projection for the year of 5.3 billion? Is there information here that suggests they should change that projection in the upcoming WASDE report? And the difficult part of answering that question is that there has been a structural change in the amount of corn that's in the feed and residual category during the first half of the year. You go back 15 years, and for a 10-year period, first half use was about 64% of the annual total. Then that jumped to 68%. The last 3 years, it's averaged 74%. So what is a normal seasonal pattern of disappearance? We don't know. But if you use 5.3 projected, then use during the first half of the year this year is about 73% of that total. Is that enough information to change the projection? I don't think so. I think USDA will stay with that number. So then we'll look at the other categories of use, ethanol in particular and exports, to see if there's reason to bring the year-ending stocks number down. And I wouldn't be surprised that we do some of that so that ending stocks will continue that pattern we've seen for the last 4 or 5 months of each month we get a tighter projection for year-ending stocks. We're not going to run out of corn. We've got plenty of corn, but it's not going to be in surplus. So I think given then the intentions to plant less corn next year and the fact that we're starting a little late, perhaps getting the crop planted, we've got some lingering drought conditions in the western Corn Belt, some snow in the northern plains. You've got just enough uncertainty about next year's crop that I think in combination with this strong demand for old crop, we've got corn prices on pretty good footing right now that we're probably going to maintain current price levels well into the planting season right now. And then we'll see whether there's any change in the planting numbers in June, what kind of growing season we have. If you just go with the planting intentions, back that into a normal harvested acreage number, use a trend yield, you get a crop that's about 150 million bushels smaller than what we harvested this past year. That probably would result in some modest buildup in corn stocks next year, 2014-15, but not large and certainly not burdensome, suggest that we could maintain corn prices even with trend yields at next year at the same price level we had this year.
Yeah, so we're looking at on the board, but $4.80 to $5?
We're seeing December corn push $5. That with a trend yield, I don't think prices will hold at that level into harvest time, but certainly you could see cash prices next year in the 425 to 450 range rather than, you know, the sub $4 level that some folks were thinking early on. So if we average 4.5 this year, we might average close to that in the upcoming marketing year as well.
Soy complex?
Soy is a very different story in terms of old crop situation. The March 1 stocks number came in just about as expected, 990 million bushels or so. Really no surprises there. But we do continue to see very strong old crop soybean prices because of the consumption pace, particularly in the export market, and the unresolved issue of how we're going to make old crop supplies fit through the end of the marketing year. We're committed to export more soybeans than we have. So either those have to be canceled, rolled into next year, or we're going to see much tighter year-ending stocks, and there's a limit to that. And until we get that resolved, it appears that old crop bean prices are going to stay very, very strong. And we continue to move higher, even though stocks were not a surprise as of March 1. We still think that with the intended acreage for next year, 81.5 million acres, almost 5 million more than we planted last year, a trend yield, then you do have a very large crop potential coming in 2014. And that would project to some buildup in inventories from pipeline levels at the end of this year of, say, 130 to 140 million bushels. You would probably be something over 300 million bushels by the fall of 2015. And in the scope of things, that would suggest soybean prices much lower than what we've had the past 2 years. Rather than the $13 we're going to average this year, you would be thinking more in terms of $10.50 to $11 for next year's crop.
Does that cause, do you think, producers to reconsider how many bean acres they'll put in the ground?
You know, it may. Initially, we did see new crop soybean prices decline and new crop corn prices increase following the release of the report. But there was really no follow-through on that change in spread. And unless there is, unless soybean prices become less attractive relative to other crops, then I think it's going to be hard to convince producers to shift. But if we get an extremely late planting season, it might even point to more soybean acres. I think we're a long way from that happening at this point.
Does it tell you producers need to market beans more aggressively this year in the early season than they have in past years?
Suggest to me that we need to be fairly aggressive on new crop beans. Prices are much higher than can be maintained if we have a normal crop. And secondly, prices are well above the insurance price, which I always like to come back to as kind of a base. So I think there's opportunity here to get 15-20% priced if you're not there yet.
Go through ending stocks. You gave me for the soybeans already a 130-140 for this year, something like $300 million for next year. Have you forward figured the corn number as well?
Yeah, it looks like, you know, right now the projection is for this year we'll have about just under 1.5 billion bushels carry over. Maybe it's probably going to end up a little smaller than that, maybe 1.4. If we have a crop that reflects a trend yield and planting intentions, and we see an uptick in consumption right across the board, even modest in every category, slightly more ethanol, slightly more livestock feed, slightly larger exports, you only end up with a year-ending stocks of about 1.6 billion at the end of the 2014-15 marketing year. So you would go from a stocks-to-use ratio of about 11% only up to about 12% next year. And so without a large build in inventory, it suggests that prices will be maintained pretty much at current levels.
Okay, so I have a question. I don't remember whether I learned this from you or from somebody else along the lines, but if 1.5 is kind of the midpoint for a standard carryout, 1.5 billion bushels, and 460, 462 is, roughly speaking, the midpoint for pricing, does that give you, every 100 million bushels is worth a dime is what I remember, So, I mean, it's a rough figure, and I know it spreads out as the further you get from the midpoint, but the numbers seem to work. So if we're at 1.4 and that would give you a 470 crop, and if we're at 1.6, that would give you a 440.
Yeah, it seems to work out, whether that's just coincidence, but you know that relationship between stocks and price in absolute terms changes a little bit over time because we use more and more corn. So 100 million bushels is really a smaller part of the total consumption than it used to be, but I think as a rough guideline, that's not a bad way to think about it.
Our thanks, of course, go to Daryl Good, ag economist at the University of Illinois, for joining us to talk about the prospective plantings and the grain stocks reports. I'll be back in just a couple minutes. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's April Fool's Day. Among the great pranks, in 1957, the BBC TV show Panorama showed the Swiss harvesting spaghetti from trees. Evidently, the dreaded spaghetti weevil had been eradicated, making for a bountiful harvest. And in 1998, Burger King ran an ad in USA Today introducing the left-handed Whopper. The condiment stripped out only on the right side. Customers requested not only the new left-handed burgers, but also the old right-handed model as well. On this day in agricultural history in 1582, France adopted the new Gregorian calendar. Prior to that, The new year was celebrated in France on April 1st. In 1875, Sir Francis Galton published the first newspaper weather map in the Times, London, England. In 1893, the first dishwashing machine became an award-winning success at the Columbian Exposition. The model was originally patented by Josephine Cochran, whose company eventually evolved into KitchenAid. In 1911, Seaman Ashiel Knapp died, an American agriculturalist. He began the system which evolved into the U.S. Cooperative Extension Service. He introduced improved methods of farming into Louisiana, spurred the development of rice culture in the Southwest, demonstrated methods for curbing the boll weevil in Texas, and inaugurated a federal program of farm demonstrations throughout the South. And in 1960, Tyros-1, the first weather observation satellite, was launched from Cape Kennedy. It sent the first television pictures back from outer space. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the closing market report for Tuesday afternoon. Now here's Drew Lerner with an update of today's weather forecast.
Weather conditions across the lower Midwest will deteriorate as we go through the night tonight and into the day tomorrow as our first of two storm systems marches across the region. This storm system is not going to be a heavy rain producer, but it's moisture that's going to occur off on top of already wet soil conditions, and so the end result will be some further delay and getting into the fields. But the unfortunate part is it's going to be followed by yet another storm system, and that one will be larger in size and have much more impact on the Midwest. That event will occur Thursday into Friday, and we'll expect it to produce some 1 to 2 inch amounts of rainfall across the lower and eastern parts of the Midwest, while some heavy snows fall across some of the region from Nebraska into Wisconsin. The storm system will leave behind very wet soil and no opportunity to get into the fields for a while. We will see some drying take place as we go into the weekend, but another cool air mass coming southeastward out of Canada promises to bring some additional precipitation to the region and also drop temperatures more notably across the area. Some of the computer forecast models today have suggested a new low pressure center will form on the central Gulf of Mexico coast, and it will move to the northeast up the Atlantic seaboard as we go through the early part of next week. The storm is advertised to be large enough that some precipitation will fall in Ohio, Indiana, and Kentucky, keeping some of those areas quite wet as well. The storm system is probably overdone, and I think future model runs will reduce the size of this event, but the bottom line is that we will see enough cool air across the Midwest during the first half of next week to restrict the drying rates across the area, and that will put us in a position of further delays in getting into fields. There will be some drier and warmer weather occurring in the second half of next week going into the following weekend. That'll be a time that everybody will be waiting for with bated breath. As far as the precipitation potentials in hard red winter wheat country are concerned, those areas are not likely to see much precipitation, at least not in the southwest plains from west Texas into southwestern Kansas. Those areas will have to wait until the period, probably the 11th through the 13th, for a significant amount of moisture. With that said, though, the storm system that's expected tomorrow into Friday will also produce some moisture in Nebraska, northeast Colorado, and easternmost portions of Kansas and Oklahoma, offering an opportunity for some moistening of the soil there. But as far as the western High Plains region is concerned, they'll have to wait much longer in time before they see better precipitation. Our temperatures today will contrast sharply from 20s and 30s for highs in the Dakotas and Minnesota, where that heavy snow event occurred yesterday, to readings in the 60s and perhaps even a few lower 70s in the Ohio River Valley. Cooler air will work its way slowly to the southeast, but it looks like the Ohio River Valley probably won't see a significant amount of cool-off for a while. There will be another storm system forming across the southwestern portions of the Corn Belt as we move into Wednesday night and Thursday. That'll bring more warm air northward temporarily. So 70-degree highs may occur for Wednesday and Thursday across the lower eastern parts of the Midwest, while 30 and 40-degree readings occur in the northwestern parts of the region. As we get into the weekend, though, the temperatures will turn cooler in most areas. Saturday's highs will be in the 40s north and 50s in the south. It looks like our low temperatures across the Midwest will contrast tonight with readings in the teens and 20s in the far northwest, while we stay in the 40s, perhaps even some lower 50s from Missouri into the Ohio River Valley. The warmth in the lower eastern Midwest will likely continue as we move into Thursday and Friday mornings, but then after that it will cool down. We'll see temperatures in the 30s as we get to Sunday morning. This is meteorologist Drew Lerner.
Our thanks to Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City for his update of the weather forecast. And that wraps up this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.